From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Russia's President Vladimir Putin made a rare visit to a Russian airbase in Syria Monday, declaring victory over terrorists and announcing a partial withdrawal of Russian forces. Mr. Putin said the military was tasked with fighting militia groups, and the task has been achieved brilliantly. It was the Russian leader's first trip to Syria since Russia intervened in September 2015 that allowed Syrian forces to reverse their battlefield losses. After holding talks with Mr. Putin, Syrian leader Bashar al-Assad thanked the Russians and Syrian militaries for what he called their exceptional unity. The U.S. Defense Department questioned the extent of the Russian pullout. A Pentagon spokesman said past Russian statements don't often correspond with actual troop reductions. David Lesh, a history professor at Trinity University and a Syria watcher, is equally skeptical.
Putin has announced the withdrawal, and there have been mostly a rotation of troops. So I guess in the strict sense of the term, he may be correct, but there's still a lot of action to be seen, I think, by Russian military in Syria.
Meanwhile, a war monitor said Islamic State jihadists have been driven out by Syrian forces and Iranian-backed militia backed by Russian airstrikes in Hama and rebel-controlled Idlib provinces. The bodies of 15 Tanzanian UN peacekeepers killed in Democratic Republic of Congo were repatriated Monday. A memorial service was held in the DRC town of Beni. The Tanzanian ambassador, Paul Ignace Mello, was on hand.
We continue to pray for all peacekeepers as this deadly incident is not only Tanzanians. We take it as an incident to the mission.
The peacekeepers were killed Thursday in eastern DRC after clashes with suspected Ugandan rebels. This is VOA News. A fifth day of protests against President Donald Trump's decision to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital erupted in Lebanon. Russian President Putin, who stopped in Egypt and Turkey after declaring victory in Syria, criticized the U.S. decision. Speaking alongside his Turkish counterpart Recep Tayyip Erdogan, Mr. Putin said the move does not help the situation in the Middle East and actually destabilizes the situation. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, meeting with European Union officials in Brussels Monday, insisted the declaration only reflects the reality on the ground and claims Jerusalem has been Israel's capital for 3,000 years. But EU foreign policy chief Federica Mogherini stuck by the view that a two-state solution is the only viable way to achieve peace.
We believe that the only realistic solution to the conflict between Israel and Palestine is based on two states, with Jerusalem as the capital of both the State of Israel and the State of Palestine along the 67 line. This is our consolidated position.
Mr. Netanyahu says he believes most, if not all, European countries will eventually do what the U.S. has done and move their embassies to Jerusalem and recognize the city as Israel's capital. While in Ankara, Russian leader Putin and Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan announced that a controversial purchase of a Russian missile system should be finalized this week. Turkey is a member of NATO. The alliance said it strongly opposes the sale, claiming it's incompatible with its own systems. A 27-year-old man from Bangladesh is suspected of setting off a homemade pipe bomb Monday strapped to his body in a crowded New York subway system, wounding himself and three others. The suspect, Akayed Ula, has been hospitalized, suffering from burns from the explosive device that didn't fully ignite. New York's mayor, Bill de Blasio, called it an attempted terrorist attack.
Thank God the perpetrator did not achieve his ultimate goals. Thank God our first responders were there so quickly to address the situation to make sure people were safe.
According to law enforcement officials, the suspect had possession of Islamic State materials and told them he was reacting to what he called U.S. military aggression. Another earthquake jolted Kermanshah province in western Iran Monday, registering 6.0 magnitude, the same region struck by last month's 7.3 magnitude tremor that killed more than 500 people. A Ukrainian court has ordered the release of former Georgian president Mikhail Saakashvili, who stands accused of trying to orchestrate a coup. The judge rejected a request by prosecutors to keep Saakashvili under house arrest. He told reporters after being released he plans to continue what he called constitutional calm, but a necessary transfer of power in the country. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today's Tuesday, November 7th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Liberia's Supreme Court upholds a petition challenging the conduct of the country's October 10th presidential election.
It's a great day for our country. I don't think in living history there has been a time when the Supreme Court has put a halt on a presidential runoff. So this is an indication of a new beginning for our country. I'm proud to be a Liberian.
Charles Bromskin is the leader of Liberia's Liberty Party, which led the petition to the Supreme Court. The Elections Commission says it will abide by the court's order. Meanwhile, Judge Weah's coalition has asked its supporters to remain peaceful and law-abiding. And Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe Monday sacked his vice president.
His Excellency the President, Comrade Araji Mugabe, has exercised his powers to relieve Honorable Vice President Edi Mnangagwa of his position.
Kaya Moyo is Zimbabwe's information minister. A member of DRC's main opposition said they rejected the Election Commission's call for elections in 2018. The wife of former South Sudan Army chief says her husband is under house arrest, and Ghanaian farmers are connected to tractors across the country. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Liberia's Supreme Court Monday upheld a petition challenging the conduct of the country's October 10th presidential election. The petition was brought by four political parties led by Charles Bromskin's Liberty Party. They claimed the election was marred by massive irregularities and a violation of the Constitution. In its ruling on Monday, the Supreme Court ordered a stay on the runoff election, which was scheduled to take place today, Tuesday, until it can investigate the complaint filed by the four parties. It ordered the commission to give urgent attention to the process. Councillor Charles Bromskin, who led the petition, described the ruling as a great day for Liberia.
It's a great day for our country. I don't think in living history there has been a time when the Supreme Court has put a halt on a presidential runoff. So this is an indication of a new beginning for our country. I'm proud to be a Liberian, and I am humbled by the decision of the Constitutional Court. The cause that we're pursuing is not about me personally, nor about our party, the Liberty Party. It's about our country. We believe that democracy is based upon the rule of law. And unless the rule of law obtains, we will not be able to build democracy in our country.
Councillor Bromskin, some people now are saying you and the ruling Unity Party and the other candidates, you are behaving now like you are losers in the first round and you're trying to maneuver your way back into the system.
Well, as untrue as that may be, they could probably say that about me because I didn't make it to the second round. But the Unity Party standard bearer, who is the current vice president, made it to the second round. But he finally came around to understanding what we've been saying all along, that the process was completely flawed and that nothing good can come out of an evil process. So he joined us, other political parties like the All Liberian Party, the Alternative National Congress, they've all joined us and agreed with us that there was just too many irregularities, there was just too much fraud in the process for it to be seen as having met basic minimum standards of free, fair, and transparent elections.
Here is another thing, another idea that I've been reading about. I just read it, I think it was in the Daily Observer newspaper of Liberia, that the idea of government of national unity that's being floated, either they say by ECOWAS or someone. What do you know about that?
I have no idea what they're talking about. Our effort now is not about establishing a government. Our effort is getting to the bottom of the fraud, correcting the system, and being able to have new, fresh elections that will produce a president as a result of the votes of the Liberian people.
When you say new, fresh elections, are you going to the first round or are you going to the runoff?
No, the runoff has been stopped. And we believe that we have sufficient evidence that will be demonstrated to cause the runoff to be completely canceled and have a rerun of the elections.
Suppose the elections commissions come up tomorrow or the day after and says, listen, we review your complaints and this is our decision. If you're not satisfied, are you taking it to the Supreme Court?
Well, the law provides that the Supreme Court is the ultimate decision maker in these cases. And we expect the election commission to rule against us because the procedure here is one of the anomalies in the law, where the election commission is both the defendant and the judge. So we expect them to rule against us, and then we're going to appeal to the Supreme Court to have the matter finally adjudicated.
Charles Bramskin is the leader of Liberia's Opposition Liberty Party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. The Elections Commission says it will abide by the Supreme Court's order to halt all activities relating to Tuesday's runoff election. Musa Deng is the attorney for the National Elections Commission of Liberia, also known as NEC.
Is the final arbiter of constitutional issues. The court has spoken. Mandated the National Elections Commission to conduct an investigation of the complaint of the Liberty Party before any further proceedings or elections can be held. This, the commission will abide by. We are glad that there is the rule of law and that the court has now offered an interpretation, and we shall proceed therefrom.
Musa Deng is the attorney for the National Elections Commission of Liberia. He spoke Monday following the Supreme Court ruling. Meanwhile, George Weah's Coalition for Democratic Change, the CDC, has called on its supporters to remain calm, peaceful, and law-abiding in the wake of Monday's Supreme Court ruling delaying the runoff election. Weah and incumbent Vice President Joseph Boakai were supposed to be contesting the runoff today. In a press release Monday, the CDC said it will hold a news conference today, Tuesday, on the electoral situation.
As a coalition, we are of the opinion that the Supreme Court needs to be respected. It has gone through these matters. As they say, it was argued adequately and exhaustively by the various groupings. Again, the CDC was not before the Supreme Court. The CDC has not lost anything. The NEC has been asked to continue a process that it began. And that is the process of hearing or complaint on the elections. It has also been asked to announce final results based on the outcome of that hearing. Neither of these things is by itself strange. What was new is that the Supreme Court said it's only after these hearings are determined that election results can be called final. We think that this is a marked departure from previous rulings. And we remember the CDC ruling in 2005, wherein we challenged those election results and were determined as final even before our appeal was heard. So we are of the opinion that this matter could be useful in future cases that may arise, even though the facts of the current situation might limit its applicability. Again, we ask our partisans that as part of the administrative leadership of the party, we are going to have discussions on these matters. We will serve on the party's legal team. We will inform the party. And a statement as to the political direction will be made by our political leaders on this matter.
That was Phil Tappet-Dixon, lawyer for the Congress for Democratic Change, the CDC. The audio was provided by Liberia's Front Page Africa newspaper. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, November 7th. Daybreak Africa time is 14 minutes past the hour. A member of the DRC's main opposition, known as the Rassemblement, says they reject the Election Commission's decision to hold the long-awaited elections in December 2018 to replace President Joseph Kabila. Mr. Kabila's constitutionally mandated term expired in December 2016. Albert Puella is a member of parliament and coordinator of the opposition Dynamics. He says the new election timetable is unacceptable and that President Kabila must step down.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to share our disappointment of Congolese opposition. Congolese opposition doesn't accept this election calendar Mr. Nanga has published yesterday because it's not realistic. First of all, Mr. Nanga, the president of Electoral Commission, said that he needed 504 days before to organize elections. Mr. Nikki Haley came here, and now they changed because of this pressure. Mr. Kabila had to leave the power since last year, and he got one more year according to the last agreement. And now he wants to take one more year, and according to us, we cannot accept.
You mentioned Ambassador Nikki Haley. I'm looking at a statement published by the United States Mission to the United Nations saying that the United States will support the effort by the international community and the Elections Commission to make sure that the elections are held and also that President Kabila will respect the December 31st agreement. Are you saying that is not enough?
No, it's not enough because Mr. Kabila has shown us that it is not a trustful person. All agreements he signed, he didn't respect all of them. Even the Constitution, he didn't respect the Constitution. I'm not sure that he will respect what Mrs. Nikki Haley, the U.S. ambassador. So according to us, Mr. Kabila has to leave the power.
So, Mr. Puella, what does the opposition want?
Yes,
I mean, if you want President Kabila to leave, why not go to the elections to make sure that people can vote him out?
No, Mr. Kabila can no more run for presidency because he did already his two terms according to the Constitution. But whenever the fair election won't be organized in our country, he will continue to be there to maintain himself in the office. He don't want to leave.
What do you say, what people will say, well, the opposition is not ready for election?
We are ready. Even if Mr. Kabila leaves the power today and they tell us that election can take place in 2 months or 3 months, we will be ready for that. But we don't want to see Mr. Kabila no more in the office.
Albert Puella is an opposition member of parliament and coordinator of the opposition dynamics. He was speaking with me from the DRC capital, Kinshasa. Zimbabwe on Monday witnessed the dismissal of yet another vice president, once regarded as a strong successor to President Robert Mugabe. Emmerson Mnangagwa follows in the footsteps of his predecessor, Joyce Mujuru, who was similarly dismissed in 2014. Ndimiyaki Mwakalele of VOA Zimbabwe Service has more.
Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe dismissed his vice president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, Monday, who has long been embroiled in allegations of factionalism and disloyalty. Information Minister Simon Kayamoyo delivered the news of the dismissal to the media.
His Excellency the President, Comrade Araji Mugabe, has exercised his powers to relieve Honorable Vice President Edi Mnangagwa of his position as Vice President of the Republic of Zimbabwe with immediate effect.
Kayamoyo cited, quote, traits of disloyalty, disrespect and deceitfulness among the reasons for Mnangagwa's dismissal. Until recently, Mnangagwa had been considered a leading candidate to succeed President Mugabe once he leaves office. Mnangagwa's journey to his dismissal closely resembles that of his predecessor, Joyce Mujuru, who was dogged by rumors of corruption and plotting to overthrow the government before being publicly called upon by the First Lady, Grace Mugabe, to step down or face dismissal. Warnings of Mnangagwa's pending dismissal became evident over the weekend when President Mugabe, while addressing youth at an interfaith rally in Bulawayo, angrily questioned if he had failed in picking Mnangagwa as his vice president and declared he would drop him if that turned out to be the case. At the same rally, Mrs. Mugabe cranked up the pressure on Mr. Mnangagwa, accusing him of organizing people to boo her while she addressed a rally, and a day later, labeling him a liquidator who had had an eye on her husband's seat since independence in 1980. Speculation of Mnangagwa's ouster has been rife, and many anticipated that that would be announced at the party's hastily called Extraordinary Congress in December, so news of Mnangagwa's dismissal Monday caught many by surprise. Constitutional experts say the move was legal because Vice President Mnangagwa was appointed by the president, not elected as a running mate. Love Momaduku is a constitutional lawyer and leader of the opposition National Constitutional Assembly Party.
Zvinongoitika chirenguwane kuti kubva pavakagadzira bumbiro ravo iri vakaunzai vanoti kwai one center of power.
From the time they organized the party constitution, they chose one center of power. Whatever Mugabe does is what works. So there is no need for a meeting. Mugabe simply does whatever he wants in the party.
President Mugabe's lawyer, Terence Hussein, offered this analysis.
Government, yes, you sit at the pleasure of the president. These vice presidents were appointed, and because they were appointed, they can be, as the president puts it, disappointed.
With Mnangagwa now out of the way, many question who will replace the 75-year-old former intelligence chief. Many believe the seat will go to First Lady Grace Mugabe following a push from the Women's League that she heads to amend the constitution to allow for a woman in the presidium. Several ZANU-PF groups, including the women and youth, have already backed Mrs. Mugabe. But political analyst Professor Sipamandla Zondi says this could backfire for the ZANU-PF party.
The appointment of Grace Mugabe might unite the forces that are militating against the current, the chief Oti, for example. And it might unite Mnangagwa with Joyce Mujuru, with Chris Mtsangwa, with the war veterans, and all the other forces that are influential and were influential for a long time in ZANU-PF, now will exist from outside ZANU-PF and challenge ZANU-PF from outside.
Mnangagwa, nicknamed Ngwena, has seen his political stock plummet in the last few months on accusations by party rivals that he was plotting to get President Mugabe to step down in his favor. Mnangagwa denies the accusations. Reporting for VOA's Zimbabwe service, this is Ndimiake Mwakalielie in Washington.
The wife of South Sudan's former army chief says her husband, General Paul Malong, has been surrounded by soldiers who are ordered to disarm him. Lucy Ayak says the soldiers are acting on the orders of President Salva Kiir. VOA South Sudan in Focus program says it obtained a copy of the letter which states that all reasonable force should be used to disarm Malong and his bodyguards. Ayak says President Kiir will be held responsible if anything happens to her husband.
Major General Mangarbo, chief of operation, he came with the two other officers. Like one person is from military intelligence and the other guy is from police. They came to my husband's house, which is in Juba, and they delivered for him that message, that written document he had seen, the one which has been written on the 30th of October. It's a presidential degree. He told him that he has been told to come and disarm his bodyguard and surrender and go and arrest them. The house now has been all the military, they brought all the arms there to surrender the house. The house is under surrender. They surrender all the house.
Have you been able to speak to your husband?
I cannot be able to speak to him because we are in a meeting. Since they came, it's like they are discussing about going all this in this document. Because the document now is clear, they say that no visiting, even all his wife are not allowed to visit him unless they take permission from Chief of General Defense to come and visit him. Number two, all his bodyguards have to be taken and arrested, and he has to remain there inside. No moving outside.
Have you made any attempts to speak to President Kiir, who has signed this letter?
I think nobody has confirmed the letter, because now they came as an official. They came during working hours. They came with all their bodyguards to implement this letter.
I know that there have been efforts to talk to the president to allow your husband to go home. Is there any response, any official response from the president? When people meet him, what does he tell them?
No official response. I think you have been seeing my letter. All those letters I've been writing to him, no response. The only response is just to ask last time when I lost my daughter. Is the response, he came and told my husband that you are not allowed to go to bury your daughter. And you are not allowed to fly to Kenya to go for DNA test. That is the only response he did. But all this attempt which has been done to let him release my husband, he did not want. I don't know what is happening to him.
What are you doing as family members? I've also seen another posting by a name along talking about the same problem. So what are you doing as family members?
We are not doing anything. We are just letting the public know what is going around in Juba. I'm aware of the letter of my son, I mean, the one who has just posted when this exercise is taking place at home in my husband's house. We are just worried. We are worried. Because this, the way I'm seeing it, it can escalate into another war. And president doesn't want to solve it. Anything can happen to my husband. We will hold president accountable. He doesn't want to release him to go for medical checkup. When we lost our daughter, he refused not to allow him to mourn with the family, go and bury her daughter. And now they came to him, they want to arrest his bodyguards, I think, and they want to arrest him. What has he done to the government? And president doesn't want to come out clearly and charge him in the court of law so that he can defend himself. This is another way of assassinating someone. My husband has been loyal to the government. He never did ill intention about the government. But now look at what the government is paying him back.
That's Lucy Ayack, the wife of South Sudan's former army chief, General Paul Malong. She was speaking to John Tanza of VOA South Sudan in Focus program from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. The Troll Tractor platform in Ghana connects farmers to tractor operators across the country to help increase mechanization of local farms. Co-founder and farmer himself, Emmanuel Ansa Amprofi, spoke to Ricky Shryak about how the business was born and how they connect the farmers to their current fleet of 260 tractors.
We were discussing problems within the sector, which has to do from mechanization to production, marketing, and all the things within the value chain. That is our problem that is facing the agriculture sector in Ghana. So it was then that we used our various experiences. I'm a young farmer myself. It was the thing of, how do we get young people to go into agri? If we are going to use the same canvas and hoe, it's never going to happen. Easy, like Uber, for people to get access to tractors. So that is how the idea came up.
And how easy is it for people to get access to these tractors? This is an expensive piece of equipment. How many do you have? What does it cost a normal farmer to rent these tractors? It's a shared platform.
Yes, we are tractor don't own any machines yet. We leverage on other people's machines, other farmers' machines. We make the tractors more efficient. So, say a farmer needs a tractor, under normal circumstances, he would have run searching for a tractor operator before he can get the service. Now, when even he has paid for this service, the tractor operator is also waiting to get more farmers. The farmer who has first requested area before he moves, because it doesn't make business sense for the operator to move miles, 15 kilometers, 20 kilometers, just to go and do 1 acre. So what we do is we use technology. We decided let's use technology to break the gap. So a request come on our platform using our short code number in Ghana, because the USSD, which is the basic of all the features on the phone, works on all networks, with or without internet. So a farmer can dial this short code. And when you are in Ghana, you are dialing it *714*85# on all networks. You can then go through the process, make a request, and then state where his farm is. You mention how many acres he wants plow or he wants harrow. He mentioned. So if you say he says 5 acres, he mentioned 5 acres. And then we connect him to the service. Now, another cool thing with this is that he also has the opportunity to pay with his mobile money.
That was Emmanuel Ansa Amprofi, the co-founder of Trotro Tractor. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Ghana. And that is it for this Tuesday, November 7th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Greg Burns, I am James Barton in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good day.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.